Welcome back to What's Up ABQ, the podcast that showcases the people, places, and things you need to know around the Duke City. Today's guest is someone who will be more than happy to help you, but you better hope you never have to call for his help. It's as serious as a heart attack.
Although you may think you understand a heart attack, you don't. Like, just trust us on that.
Stick around to hear what goes on inside a medical emergency and how you can save a life by simply moving out of the way. It's What's Up ABQ.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Lindsay.
This is Lorenzo.
And this is What's Up ABQ.
What's up Albuquerque? This is Lorenzo.
And this is Lindsay, and today we have...
Nate.
So we are not going to give you Nate's last name, because we're trying to be a little more elusive today.
Discreet.
Discreet, sure.
Yeah, Nate's a friend of ours. Met him, I don't know, recently?
Recently? I guess. I mean, yeah.
Our daughters are homies. A year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah. That's his recent,
sure. Daughters are homies. We hung out a few times and...
So, I wanted to kind of talk to you because you have a really interesting line of work, and I think it would be a really cool thing to kind of discuss. I know a lot of people don't know much about this line of work unless they're in it. And so I thought it would be really cool to kind of start our kickoff season with an interview with you, mm-hmm. partially just because we're friends, but also because it's super interesting and you have a lot of good stories to tell.
Mm-hmm. Start off with a bang.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
I am a paramedic. And I've worked in EMS for more than 20 years, responding to 911 emergencies and taking care of the citizens of Albuquerque. I've also had my hand in some management at the ambulance service and some training and education as well.
What is something that you wish people knew about your job? Because I didn't know anything until I started talking to you and asking you questions like, oh, what's that like? I had no idea. What does that job look like? What does the day-to-day look like?
It's a great question. So I think it depends where you work, like whether or not you work for a fire department or an ambulance service or in an ER, but I worked for an ambulance service. And I think probably the biggest misconception is that we're not very busy. Hmm. People think like, oh, you guys probably never get called. I would say your average shift is going to be somewhere between 10 and 13 hours, and you're going to be on an ambulance for the entire time. You don't have access to running water. You don't have access to toilets. You don't have microwaves. So you're either packing your lunch or you're trying to grab food at gas stations or fast food restaurants. And I think what I wish people understood more than anything was that we are run very hard. We're run call to call to call. About an hour, every hour there's a call, and a call takes about an hour. So in 10 to 13 hours, you're likely to respond to, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 13 or even 14 emergencies. And it can be really frustrating when you rush somewhere to get to a patient and you're like, okay, what's going on? How can we help you? And they say, well, I've had a cough for 3 weeks. And you're like, okay, so you've had a cough for 3 weeks and it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
What prompted the call right now?
Yeah, and that's, you gotta be really careful how you answer, ask that question. Because if you say, so if I understand you correctly, you've been coughing for 3 weeks, why did you call us now at 3 a.m? You're gonna put your patient in a defensive place and they're gonna shut down. A better question is to say, what happened in the last hour that made you say, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, I better get some help? Yeah, and then you get some good information. But just like more patience, I think, with us in knowing that, like, if we're at a restaurant, if you see us like standing in line at a fast food restaurant, let us go ahead. Because we sometimes would pay for food and then our tones would go off, which means we have a call and you've paid for your food. You're not getting it. You're leaving. And so it was always nice when somebody would see me and they would say, oh, please go ahead. And they would let me go in front of them in line, things like that.
You know, that's interesting. I never would have thought about that, but it's funny. When I worked at Starbucks back in the day, we had this group of paramedics that would come in, and they would come in during the closing shift and we'd always give them coffees. And then we'd see them in the morning for open shift. So it was like literally their shift change was about the same as ours, you know, but we would see them, give them free coffee as we're leaving, give them free coffee in the morning as we're opening up. So
you're walking out the door, they're coming in the door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's no lunch breaks. You might get a break. Mm-hmm. You might get an hour break. You might get a 2 minute break. But I think it's really hard to do anything with any confidence. So if you bring a book, you're like, oh, well, it seems like it's quiet. I'm going to read a book, and you open the book. And as soon as you open the book, the pager goes off. You've got another call. And then you start to get superstitious. You think like, well, that happened because I opened the book. So then you'll like have a book on the dashboard of the ambulance, and you'll look at it for like 10 minutes. And you're like, I'm not going to touch it because if I touch it, I'm going to get a call.
Yeah.
And then you say, that's ridiculous. Like, I'm going to touch the book. And you grab the book and you get a call.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was, as you were talking about that, I was thinking like, you must have spots that you have that you know, oh, if I need to use the restroom real quick, I got this spot. I mean, that's got, I mean.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like the diaper changing stations when you're like, you know, you have a baby and you're like, I know where I can change my kid's diaper in this town.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You definitely are like, this is a nice place to use the bathroom. And they're really nice.
Not so much.
And believe it or not, like some of the nicest places are like hotel lobbies. You know, so you're downtown and you walk into the hotel lobby and you walk up to the desk. You're like, can I use your restroom?
And they're like, yeah, of course, sir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, please. You know, and but otherwise you're like, you know, you're going into the bathroom at the gas station that the night before you revived somebody from a heroin overdose and there was blood and puke all over the place.
You might have work to do in that gas station bathroom.
Right. And the good news is if it comes down to that, we have plenty of, you know, cleaning agents and sanitizers and rubber gloves. So I have more than once cleaned the toilet before I used it.
yeah, for sure.
So are there any types of calls that you think are, I don't want to say Albuquerque specific because that's kind of a stupid way to put it, but but more prevalent here than maybe other places?
I definitely think so. You know, I've talked with some people throughout the nation on some online forums about how their service works in different agencies. And, you know, it's that whole like Albuquerque, this is why we can't have nice things. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens in the city, and a lot of meth, a lot of heroin, a lot of alcohol, a lot of homeless people, and a lot of psychiatric illness, schizophrenia, things like that. And oftentimes these are intermixed. You know, we don't have probably the level of car accidents that a really busy metro system like LA or Chicago has. We do have those, but it's a lot of, this is going to sound bad, but societal nuisances, like people who are out there and they're like, you get the call and they're like, so this woman, she thinks that she's Barbara Streisand's sister and she smeared Snickers all over the window of this gas station and she's been throwing rocks at cars. And it's the police are there and they're like, we're not sure what to do with her. I have heard a few friends say, I loved watching Breaking Bad and I thought that's not what Albuquerque is like. And then they make some comment like, until I rode the city bus, you know, and I would say, I remember the first night I ever rode on an ambulance. I was born and raised in Albuquerque. And the first night I ever rode on an ambulance, I got home and I told my dad, I was like, Dad, there's a whole part of Albuquerque you know nothing about. And my dad was born and raised here. And I'm just like, there's some stuff going down. Like, you know, it's sure you know this is a wild city. Like, I had no idea it was born and raised here. So I would say definitely assaults, things related to alcohol. Believe it or not, we have a lot of child abuse, which is a horrible thing. But there is a lot of child abuse in our city. And you'll see a lot of people who don't have a lot of money, and you'll go into houses where there's no running water, no electricity, nothing in the fridge. So definitely, I think we deal with some people who have less money, and there's things that come along with poverty. Okay. But we run all the other standard calls too. There's a lot of violence, a lot of shootings and stabbings. There's a lot of old people in this town. So old people fall down, old people have heart attacks, old people have strokes. So those kind of things.
Do you, and I don't know if this is a fair question, but I'll ask it anyway. And you can say no. Do you remember a time when you realized that you might be desensitized to things? Like you had hit that point where you were like desensitized to certain things?
That's a really good question. Yes. I don't know that I can like put my finger on the specific time, but when you first get in the job, you're in this state of like curiosity. So you,
I mean, I'm curious.
Yeah. So you may, you may respond to a house for somebody who suffered cardiac arrest. And when you get there, police are coming out and they're signaling a wave off, which means you can cancel. And you know, you're the person you were working with or the trainer would say, have you ever seen a dead body before? And you would say no. And they're like, well, let's go inside and take a look. And they would use it as an educational opportunity to show you this is how you would check, you know, for signs of obvious death. And you're fascinated because you've never seen anything like this before. And then at some point, it's always a little bit discomforting, right? Like, so you're like, I'm not sure what to think about that, or that was weird, or you'll have like repetitive thoughts. And then at some point you realize, like, I'm not upset at all. And I should be upset, and I'm not upset.
It's like taking that personalization out of it.
Yeah, but what's weird for me, being in for a long time, is I feel like I went from curiosity to where I was, like, fascinated by seeing things I'd never seen or only read about in books, to a point where it didn't bother me. And then in my later years, to where it bothered me more than ever before. Like, I went from a place of like, oh, this is unique, or this is fascinating, or there's something to learn here, to that didn't bother me so much, to that's somebody's dad.
Yeah.
Or that's somebody's brother. And so in my last like 5 years actively in the field is when I really started to have a hard time processing just the reality of, these aren't mannequins. This is not a scenario you do in school. These are real people with real lives. And although that was hard, I feel like it brought me to a better place because it gave me more empathy and compassion for the people that I was taking care of. And in some ways, it made the job easier and more rewarding. So I don't know the specific point in time, but there was definitely a point in time where I was like, that should have bothered me, and it didn't bother me. And, you know, there's old stories and anecdotes of paramedics working a resuscitation in like a Burger King, somebody's collapsed, they do CPR, they're not able to get the person back, they call it, they put a sheet over the patient, and then the medic's like, I need to eat.
Yes, and
they step like right over the patient and get in line to order a cheeseburger after they just had their hands on a dead person. So definitely desensitization absolutely happens. Sure.
And now you're a trainer, so you have that sort of experience and wisdom. And I mean, how do you relay that to somebody who's like fresh, you know?
Yeah, that's been one of my biggest challenges in the training realm, is I don't want to like try to steer anybody's journey. I certainly don't want to set them up for failure. I don't want to tell them, hey, this is going to be really hard and there's going to be times you're going to hate it. I keep thinking, like, if there's a way I can share some of the things that I learned, you know, after many years, if I can get them to understand this early, maybe they don't have to go through some of the trials and the hardships that I went through. But it's just one of those things that I'm like, I think you just got to go through it. And it doesn't matter what anybody tells you. But it's interesting. It's really interesting. When I teach people in person, you know, they're kind of wide-eyed and they're interested in what I have to say. If I try to take a, like, teaching role online, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm immediately, like, told that I'm wrong, or I'm, like, Reddit, I'm downvoted. And it's really frustrating because I'm like, no, you don't. Like, you say I don't know what I'm talking about, but you don't know what you're talking about. And, yeah, you downvoted me, like, 15 downvotes. But the difference here is that I'm not Googling this information. You're Googling it. You're like looking.
I live this.
I live this, and I know this off the top of my head. And so that's been hard. And there's times that, you know, one of the hardest things we're dealing with in our profession is people don't do it for very long. Like, nobody does it for 20 years like I have anymore.
Is it burnout or is it turnover?
Like, it's attrition. It's burnout. It's pay. Yeah. It's a hard job. But I would say, like, a long career is like 5 years for somebody. Wow. And so that's been hard. Like, why do I take the time to share this information with somebody who's going to be, and some people only last 6 months, you know? Wow. So that's been a challenge for sure. Yeah.
What kind of a person becomes a paramedic? Is there a certain type of person, or there's certain qualities that somebody should have, or that you've noticed like are common in people that become paramedics?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so I think that people who have a tendency to be neurodivergent in some way, shape or form do really, really well in our line of work, you know, especially people with like attention deficit, which is something I struggle with. I have met so many other providers who are like, I have that too. And it's really, it really,
ironically, the three of us sitting here have that. So
amen.
Yeah.
But the job is really well suited for it, because it's like, okay, now you drive the ambulance to this place. That's what you're going to do. You're going to drive there. You're going to get there. Okay, you're there. Yeah. Now get your stuff out of the ambulance. Okay, it's out. Now go inside the house. Like, it's very
process oriented, and even the treatment algorithms are very, you know, like decision based. Like, is the patient breathing? Yes or no? You know, like things like that. So they really seem to be well suited for people who are what I would consider neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Also, there's some interesting personalities in there. I think there's probably a higher level of narcissistic personalities in this career field than other career fields. But some of the neatest people I've ever met, and some of also some of the most unusual people that I've ever met work in this line of work. But some really good people too. Some people who really care about other people. And I mean, that may not always be apparent to our listeners. If you've ever had to call 911, you may think like, why is this paramedic being cold? It's more complex than that, and
so don't take it personally.
Take it personally when they're like really worried. They're like, you know, I've been vomiting all day long, and you're like, well, the last person,
I've seen worse.
Yeah, the last person was seizing for 3 hours straight, and so it's just like putting it into perspective. And you know, one of the things we always say is, as a provider, remember it's not your emergency, it's their emergency, and so therefore it's an emergency because they have determined that it's an emergency. So that it helps to keep that in focus.
Yeah.
So let's say somebody has to call the paramedics for whatever reason. They're called out to your house. Walk us through some best practices. What should somebody expect, and what can they do to be more helpful to paramedics when they get to their house? Because I know sitting around and like pestering them probably while they're trying to do a job is not the best thing to do. What are some things that you would like people to know about?
So things that are super helpful, like if it's nighttime, turn the lights on. You know, like open a prop a door open, turn a light on, or
put the dogs away,
or send a waiver. You know, like somebody like, hey, stand out and flag the ambulance down. Know that we're looking for you, so we see you the first time you wave. You don't need to like jump up and down and do jumping jacks.
I've been the waiver once,
and and then know that we're not. Our pace is going to be controlled. You know, we cannot run to every emergency. The last thing we need to do is like trip and fall and get injured. And we get injured on the job all the time. So please make it clear where we need to be. Make sure you give the dispatchers clear instructions. Turn your lights on. Make sure you have your numbers painted on either your house or on the side of your porch so that it's visible. It helps to prop a door open. You know, we look for those things. We know to look for those things. And then when we get into the scene, we're going to want to know where the patient is. You know, if you greet us at the front door and they're in the back room, we'll probably ask you a couple questions as we make our way to the back room. But then we want to talk to the patient. So something that is really frustrating is like, well, this is my husband, Gary. Okay, Gary, how are you feeling today? And the wife says, he feels nauseated. Thank you, wife.
Yeah.
Your name Gary? Yeah. Like it's that, but there's really, and it seems cold and rude, but it all goes into the assessment. We're trying to figure out like, where are they at mentally? Like, what are we dealing with? That's a huge, for EMS, that's a big warning sign. If somebody's mental status is not at baseline or is not, if they're not with it cognitively, that's concerning. And that could tell us about the condition that they're in. And so we look for that. And it's really important that they give us the information, that they tell us the symptoms, that they answer our questions. So it can be really unhelpful when people are trying to feed us information and we're like, no, I've got, like, I have this algorithm and this assessment pathway that I'm going to go down.
I have ADHD and you need to please respect. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and you're distracting me from that. And then when we have questions, we'll ask you.
Yeah.
You know, we'll say, hey, can you tell me a little bit about their medical history or where does he keep his medications? Also staying calm. If you get super hysterical and, you know, you're trying to interrupt what we're doing, then that's not going to help anything. And we're less likely to work with you. If you're going to be freaking out and, you know, grabbing our shoulders while we're trying to help somebody, that doesn't work well. And know that for the most part, we know what we're doing. You know, none of us are perfect and we make mistakes, but I promise you that your Google search, you know, although you may think you understand a heart attack, you don't. Like, I just trust us on that. And there's more to it. You know, you read something online and it says, oh, everybody who's having a heart attack needs nitroglycerin. Well, not necessarily so. And there's sometimes they definitely don't need that medication. So best thing to do is be available and ready to answer questions. very helpful to do things like, here's a list of their medications, or here's a box of their medications, or here's their most recent doctor visit. Like, mm-hmm. those things are very helpful. But getting in the way, telling us what we should be doing or what we shouldn't be doing, is not helpful.
So a couple of technical questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because that's where my brain's at a lot of the times. So you were talking about how, like, you'll be in the line for food or whatever, and you get a notification somehow.
Yeah.
So I have I'm totally, like, I have no idea. So I assume that it's not just you that's getting this, but like fire and police,
yeah,
right?
Like,
and
is it?
Yeah, they're like walkie talkies.
Okay.
Like
radios. Radio? Yeah, police right. radios, sort of.
So, and then you also mentioned a dispatcher. So is the dispatcher kind of just shouting this out on a frequency, and like everybody has it, and then like you just got to go to a location?
Are you asking how they kind of like delegate and triage the calls?
I'm just wondering, how do you know where to go?
Yeah, so the primary 911 dispatch center is connected to the fire department. And so they receive the initial 911 call. They broadcast that over their radio system. Our dispatchers are monitoring that information, and they get that information in real time, and they say, all right, so we've got a call coming out with Station 15, which is on Academy down by the golf course almost to San Mateo. And they look at their map and they say, out of all the ambulances that we have around the city, who has the best access? So if you're the guy that's at the McDonald's at San Mateo and Academy trying to get your lunch,
right,
there's a good chance you're probably going to be close
okay.
to wherever that fire
so
station is.
So no McFlurry for you.
Yeah.
Right, so no McFlurry. And so then they paid you, and you have a radio that you wear that has an audible tone that goes off that you'll end up hearing in your sleep and having what we call, like, there's like alarm fatigue.
Like a phantom tones?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And then you go to your
like
truck.
Phantom baby cry when you have kids and you think you hear your kids and you're like, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. You know, then you go to your truck and you have a screen in your ambulance that has where you're going and then a code, which is basically an alphanumeric code that gives you information about what type of emergency you're responding to.
We've all listened to Sublime. We know. We know what they're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
867 well, on a...
It's a 187, I thought.
Oh, yeah, you're
is
right.
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. Murder? It's different.
That's it. So PD's different?
I wasn't going to say it, but you're like, you know, murder?
Well, it's different. It's different for... It's different for all...
Like okay. cities,
all right? Cities and systems. Oh, okay. So we use it's alphanumeric, and there's 32 numbers. They're alphabetical. So like one is abdominal pain, and 32 is unknown problem. And then there's a letter which tells you if you're gonna go without lights and sirens or lights and sirens. And then there's a number after the letter that tells you a little bit more information.
Wow, that's really interesting.
But yeah. I think this kind of ties back to one of your earlier questions. What's one thing that the public wishes you would know? And that's that you tell the dispatcher all these things and we may not get that information. All we may know is it's a 78-year-old male with stroke-like symptoms. That's all we know. Mm-hmm. And so then the family will be frustrated.
You're
like
the highlights?
Yeah, and the family will be like, I already told them that he's had slurred speech for 6 hours. Why are you re-asking this question? Because all I knew was a 78-year-old male with stroke symptoms. So it can be very limited what you get. And they're always looking in real time. Where is the ambulance at? You know, are they available? And do they have a good response? Can they get there quickly?
Mm. Paramedics have their codes. And so Lindsay and I, that's how, this is kind of weird, but how we used to go to sleep was by listening to the Bernalillo County scanner, whatever.
Yeah.
And
we're freaking weirdos, okay?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Let me just back this up a minute. I really feel like there needs to be some context. Okay. We used to live in a not so great area of town. I'm not going to say where, because it doesn't matter. And the ghetto bird, you guys know what I'm talking about, used to circle our neighborhood quite a bit. And so we would want to hear, like, what is happening? Like, what's going on? We'd hear the sirens. We'd be like, all right.
I thought you just liked the noise.
Well,
or
I did at one point, and then I got used to listening to it, and it just helped. But
no,
so I'd always want to know, like, what is happening? Like, is it going to tell me what's happening if I listen? And so we used to listen to the scanner all the time.
Yeah.
I think they changed frequencies. Now it's like.
What's like digital? Like, it's kind of, it's mm-hmm. private now,
yeah,
I think.
To it anymore,
but
it's, I don't think,
but I don't think that's, I mean, is that the same
it's
thing?
Because like
it seemed like they were more so talking to, like, police than I mean, I don't know.
I'm kind of what I would consider radio naive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how all the radio systems work. I know that I've never had any interest in listening to the radios on my off time.
Yeah, for sure.
But I know that you can get access to APD, Albuquerque Police's scanners. I imagine you can hear Albuquerque Fire Department. And
some of them are really funny. Some of the calls are like, I mean, some of them are serious, but some of them are like, there's a naked man running around with a machete. Come get him. We don't know.
Yeah. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it works now exactly. You have Bernalillo County. They have their dispatch system. You have Albuquerque Fire. They have City Fire. They have their own, you know, radio, you know, their 800 megahertz frequencies, but I don't know. I'm pretty naive to how all that works.
I've heard different theories on this, but maybe you can clear it up. So how do you decide whether or not to put the sirens on and the lights?
Oh, yeah. I was wondering that,
too. So that's... Yeah. So when we get that... Wait, okay, let's clarify.
Yeah.
When you have a patient in the ambulance?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Or maybe both.
Because so Lindsay and I both have assumed, like, if they're just cruising and they're not in a rush, that more than likely somebody is deceased and passed away at that point. Like, that was kind of our assumption.
I read that somewhere, and I was like, I don't know if that's true, but...
No, so this is a great question. So when you're responding to the call, remember I told you about that alphanumeric dispatch code? So you'll get a number and a letter, and that letter tells you. So Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, A, B, C, D, E... If you get an Alpha or Bravo in our system, you would be going not lights and sirens. If it's Charlie, Delta, Echo, you'd be going lights and sirens.
Mm.
When you pick up the patient, that is completely dependent on the discretion of the provider. Okay. If they feel they're critical enough that it would benefit them to get to the hospital more quickly, they can upgrade to what we call code 3 transport, lights and sirens transport. But I wouldn't assume that, you know, for just cruising, that it means necessarily that the patient's in a good way or a bad way.
Mm.
Because it depends completely on the discretion of the paramedic. For example, if I have somebody who's having a heart attack, they need to get to the hospital quickly. But we also know that anxiety and heart attacks is bad. I may choose to not turn the lights and sirens on if I'm comfortable with the flow of traffic to try to keep the patient calm, even though I want to get to the hospital rather quickly. Other times it's completely procedural. Like they'll say, if your patient has this problem or has these signs and symptoms, then we want you to go lights and sirens. Mm. So a great example for that is, is it a stroke-like presentation within the last 6 hours? And if it is, then you should go lights and sirens.
Interesting. So,
even though they may have like stable vital signs.
Yeah. One thing that kind of, well, not doesn't kind of, it really pisses me off is when I see emergency vehicles on a big intersection and people don't move the hell out of the way, or they continue to go through the intersection. Yes, you have a green light, but there's a freaking ambulance or a fire truck or a cop, like, stop. I don't know. Yeah. It just kind of.
You're like, so when people are in traffic, the best thing to do is.
Yeah. Well, I think take a moment to think. And, you know, if I'm approaching a red light intersection that I intend to go through, I have the red light and I intend to go through it, then I'm not going to be turning off my lights and sirens. And let's say there's three lanes of traffic in a turn lane. If you panic and think that you're getting out of my way and move into the turn lane, and the turn lane was my only open lane, you just closed the intersection.
Yeah, he just blocked you off.
So I think just take a minute to think. The law says that you should yield to the right and stop. Yield to the right and stop. A lot of people yield to the right, not a lot of people stop. And that can become a problem, because if I want to make a right-hand turn and you're in the right-hand lane, you need to stop so that I can make that turn from the left-hand lane. If you keep going, then I'm like, I can't turn because you keep going. So I think just take a minute to think. And then I will say, as a layperson, I've had plenty of times where I'm out driving, my volume is not up excessively loud on my radio, and suddenly I'm like, oh, there's an emergency vehicle. And even with all the time I've spent responding in ambulances, I have to think for a minute, where do I need to go? Mm-hmm. So I think we have a fair amount of grace, and I recognize that I'm speaking for everybody, but just try to yield to the right and stop. If you do that, you'll be good. And think real quickly, like, if you're stopped at a red light, do I want to close the only, like, don't close the only open lane we have.
I think there was one time we were on I-40 going west, and I remember seeing an ambulance on I-40, emergency lights on, sirens, and they're cruising probably like maybe 85, 90. And there's like a group of people like pacing behind the ambulance and even like wanting to go past.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
In fact, we also leave it to the discretion of the driver to decide whether or not they want to use lights and sirens on the interstate, because the safest you should travel an ambulance at is about 75 miles an hour, and you really shouldn't go over that. So we ask the question, what's the average speed on the interstate? It's 85.
Well, we're going to stop there because there's a lot more to come on this interview with Nate the EMT. Next episode, he reveals one of the weirdest calls he ever made in his career, which might have included a brush with the supernatural.
It's something I think about all the time.
You just want to
the
know.
Two little eyes looking at me through the door, answering it, and then like, what in the world's going on upstairs? I have no idea.
We hope you'll come back next week on What's Up ABQ for the rest of this interview. Thanks for listening. Hey Albuquerque, could we ask you a favor? No, you don't have to drop us off at the airport or watch the kids for us, but we just want to know what you think of the What's Up ABQ podcast. Sure, it only takes a little bit of your time to listen to it, but we put hours into creating something that we hope that you'll enjoy, so if you wouldn't mind, please give us a 5-star review on your preferred platform where you listen to us. It would make us happier than Larry Barker uncovering a hidden waste of taxpayer money. Also, we'll be debuting our revamped and remodeled website soon, so stand by for that. And thanks again, Albuquerque. We love you. What's Up ABQ is back. We have more interviews with lovers, creators, doers, and dreamers of ABQ and beyond. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram and send us a message if you or somebody you know is interested in an interview. And as always, we support ABQ locals free of charge. We love you, ABQ. It's good to be back, and we'll be telling you soon, What's Up ABQ?